This is At the Edge of Canada, Indigenous Research, a show about Indigenous researchers doing research with Indigenous communities in Canada and beyond. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Falconulette, and I hope you will enjoy this show. Tensei. This is an interview with Kim Edwards, a woman who is concerned about child and family services in Manitoba. Kim is the godmother of Phoenix Sinclair. Phoenix Sinclair is the little girl killed by her mother, Samantha Kimatch, and her boyfriend, Carl McKay, in June of 2005. After much debate in Manitoba, a commission of inquiry into the circumstances surrounding the death of Phoenix Sinclair under the Honorable Ted Hughes Commissioner was started. Kim Edwards is trying to have the scope of the inquiry widened to allow a more in-depth look at child and family services care in Manitoba. Kim has started a hunger strike as well, and has been on her hunger strike for 29 days and is camped out at the Legislature of Manitoba. So here is the interview with Kim Edwards at the Manitoba Legislature.
When I took my tent down, my lawyer came over and said, well, it's the tent issue. So I just said, okay, I took my tent down and I spread that blanket out like that and put all my stuff how I was going to have it in the tent. And the head of security here comes over and he says, well, I assume you'll just be staying for the afternoon. And I said, no, I'll be staying until I get response from the Prime Minister of Canada. And he gave me one, because if you know me or ever had to deal with me, I'm very hard to, if I don't want no, I'm not going to take no. And he just looked at me all exasperated, but he had also the look of you go girl and told me that he was concerned and wanted me to pitch my bed over there in front of the security camera and that's it, but I'm not allowed to have a tent. It's funny. Occupy.
Are you sleeping here then?
I slept here last night.
How was it?
Really cold. It wouldn't have been so cold had I not been able to, or if I had been able to have some kind of shelter, even like the blockage of wind. But tonight will be much better because I have an angel who he was in the service and he brought me some military keep warm and keep dry gear, and that's awesome. So I'm going to keep doing it until I get the Prime Minister's response. And what I've asked for from the Prime Minister is a 15-minute conversation over the telephone. You don't even have to come meet me. I don't have to come meet you. Just talk to me over the phone and I can convince you.
During the interview, I asked Kim Edwards, if the Prime Minister did talk to you, what would you say to him?
In a nutshell, take that 15 minutes and give him examples of the 13 cases of human rights violations that I'm holding. And these are violations against grandparents, aunts and uncles who want to take the children completely out of the system and raise them with their own money. And they won't do it. Families have been lied about. They have been slandered. They have, to the courts. In one particular case, a judge ordered the social worker off the case and for them to clean up the file, because where the woman could not have her two nieces, the same agency sought her out for hands-on foster care giving of other children. Her nieces were permanent wards and they would never go back to the parents.
Another question that was asked of Kim is, why are these children not given back to members of the family who can care for them? Why are they placed in foster care instead of with other family members?
Probably for the same reason that they handicap children on purpose. That same case, the little girl in that case, her aunt had made all the appointments, scheduled the surgery. The surgery was to take place, I believe it was only a few days after they took the children. The surgeries were canceled. The child never got the surgery and is now a special needs student or a special needs child. And they get triple the funding. So money, money, money. That's what it's all about, money. I have one particular case. It was a case that I got the response of the Prime Minister of Canada telling me to go to INAC, Indian and Northern Affairs Canada. It was very respectful. The Prime Minister's office said that they would take the liberty of forwarding my email, and it was up to me to get in touch with INAC. So I sent them an email and phoned them, and they asked me for a 7-day turnaround. I said, okay, that's not a problem. We had about 9 days, and I phoned back to Ottawa and was told that I had a 20-minute conversation with Minister Strahl when that never occurred.
the Minister Chuck Strahl, Minister of Indian Affairs.
Minister of Indian Affairs. He himself didn't tell me, but someone from his office intercepted that meeting of human rights against an Aboriginal woman whose daughter was completely victimized in the system, and healers were shipped in for the people who made her a victim. That's wrong. She was sexually abused. She was gang raped. And they shipped in healers for the boys while they left this little girl to attempt suicide 9 times. Each time this little girl attempted suicide, I brought it to the Family Services Minister, Gord McIntosh, spoke with a woman by the name, communicated with a woman by the name of Fiona Shields. I communicated with the Premier's office. I've never uprised in my building. I've never uprised anywhere. I go into the legislative building to that Black Star practically every day, and I can wander around that building. But I cannot go to my Premier's office, and I cannot go to the Family Services Minister's office, because if I have anything for them, they stop me at security. Any other day, I can just go on in, you don't even have to sign, wander around, be in here for 3 hours. But when I'm on official business, such as a week and a half ago, when I delivered the letter requesting that the Premier change the scope of the commission, I didn't get a response until I went on announce this protest. Never got a response from the Premier from 2009 on.
And what was his response now?
It was a cut and pasted letter stating that stating what I know, what I'm protesting against, what I'm trying to get removed. I am trying to get Phoenix Sinclair's name removed off of this inquiry, because if they remove the inquiry, then the scope can widen and the people will have a voice in this. I have been told that Aboriginal issues of 30 years ago and 40 years ago have relevancy in this commission, but not the people of today. I am told anything that happened at the AMC, such as in 2006 when I had to stop a mock funeral, and was asked by an employee of the AMC, why are you fighting so hard? You're not even Indian. That's not relevant, because that happened after her death. But Jennifer Howard comes in, Darlene McDonald comes in, they get to take the stand. They weren't the children's advocate and the family services minister. Cabinet shuffle, just before everything starts, Jennifer Howard comes in. You want to know what that cabinet shuffle's for? It's called plausible deniability. If Gord McIntosh is asked in there, he has to address all those emails, because the commission has those emails. Jennifer Howard goes in there, gets those tough questions on CFS. She goes, oh, change is coming now. It's changed. I don't know nothing about that, but I know that change is coming. That's what happened here. That's what happened in 2008 with Gary Dewar when he left Manitoba, because he's all over this too. And that's what happened with Ron Evans, because it was Ron Evans' administration that I made a formal complaint to Indian and Northern Affairs and was told, well, that's not our mandate. However, we're going to reply to you and tell you that it is the AMC that you have to go and make a complaint in regards to Chief embezzling $3,000 from a memorial fund in which the Headingley and Rockwood inmates put together for Phoenix's funeral. And boy, am I ever going to be in trouble for that one. But to Chief, I say, bring it on. He's already threatened to sue me once, but I've got the Sun Media backing me up on the fact that he did have knowledge of monies being raised for Phoenix Sinclair. It was his nephew who started the money drive after two other inmates started a beautiful star blanket for Phoenix. He said that I was slandering his good name, and if I didn't cease and so forth, then I put all the evidence that I have together, such as it's now a defunct paper, but the Thunder Voice newspaper did a great big write-up on it and praised the chief for his $3,000 donation to the inmates, because what they were doing was really good. Put it all on an email and sent it out to my premier and saying, well, will you help me now, sir? And the man has never bothered me since. However, he did embezzle $3,000 from the inmates' fund, because that's what told me when I spoke with him on the phone, and he erected a plaque on the Fisher River First Nation garbage dump and says, oh, that's our honor to Phoenix, just like the honor was, oh, we're not gonna say anything about the child that we know was dead. Ain't no way that community did not know anything. In fact, people took the stand and said, oh yeah, we saw. I was afraid of Carl Wesley McKay, the man that killed her. But then they say, I used to bring my baby over and have a play date, and I saw him be so mean to Phoenix. but I was so afraid of him that I did not tell. Well, why didn't you tell? It was none of my business. Well, why didn't you tell your social worker aunt who worked for Intertribal?
But don't you think the issue with the children, these are poor children, a lot of people just say, well, you know, I have my own issues in life. I'm a middle-class family, and I'm doing my own things, and I have to take my kid to soccer, and I got to take him to school, and I have to earn a living.
My grandson in Vancouver, got to go to Miami, Florida, got to do this, got to do that. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
So why should we care about these young children, these Aboriginal children? It's the government's problem. That's why we pay taxes to the government.
Pick that up and come with me. The reason... The Assembly of Manitoba hereby declares that the fundamental principle guiding the provision of services to children and families are, number one, the safety and security and well-being of all children and their best interests are the fundamental responsibility of all society. That means doctors, that means politicians, lawyers, the guy that works in the vendor, the criminal, anybody that is over the age of 18 and not a child anymore. It's your duty.
I suggested the system actually wants to protect children. They're scared something will happen to them. Kim said it's really about the industry of child and family services.
Is their funding money is going to be cut? I actually have a... it wasn't a case that I took as the foundation because I don't do... I'm not a lawyer. And I don't... really do custody disputes. But in this particular case, I helped the man write his legal argument. And it was a parental alienation case. They were from Pakistan. And the mother came here and she pulled that, I'm oppressed by my, you know, Muslim husband. I know that wasn't the case because this Muslim man treated me like an equal. His daughter, he cried when she moved back to Pakistan because her rights as a woman were going to be taken away from her. His wife left him, beat one of the children in front of the youngest one, who never really knew her mother. One of the children was, I believe, 15, and the other one was 17. They had a voice, and when they rose up to speak against their mother in family court, the mother said, oh, I don't want those two, I just want the baby. And there was a rush because she was 11, and at 12, she has a voice. And the judge ordered Child and Family Services to get involved, which I'm not quite sure that can actually be done, but to apprehend the child from the dad who raised her for 11 years all by himself with the help of his family. She was put into a Christian foster home for the transition period to go to her mom. She stated she was afraid of her mom, but point being is she was put in the Aboriginal system because she is... Muslim, she's not Caucasian, so all nations get whatever. If you're black, your child goes to all nations. If you're Muslim, your case goes to all nations, not the general agency. Being is she was put in a Christian home, I believe, just outside of Steinbach, and she had to go to church and learn about Jesus Christ. And don't think that I'm knocking Jesus Christ; I have him tattooed to my arm. But to a Muslim, that is a fundamental right being broken. Yet she could not. The Christian family had to preach Christ into her and clean her all up, but would not take her to mosque.
So there's so many rights violations, and I think what Kim said that's really important is more the children's voices are not being heard.
Yeah,
so
it's not about
what about exactly? And Kim's asked the right question, and the only one of the few people that asked that question is, were the children afraid of you? No. And that's the whole thing. And yet there's still this mindset that, well, they should be kept apart from you. I actually was blamed in parental alienation because they were afraid of their father and they resisted going. So, well, yeah. And my big thing has been my children have had no right to a voice, to a say. I mean, I made my children go halftime. Because that is the legislation. That's what their father wanted. And when they fought going, I got blamed. Every time they didn't go, I got held in contempt of court.
This happened. It sounds exactly like I won't call him a client. He was more of a friend. That's exactly what happened. Is the children didn't want to see their mother. But the kicker of this one is I'm just going to go off into another case for just a moment. There was a mother. I'm not saying that I condone what she did, but she was on prescription medication for depression. She had lost, I believe it was her sister and her aunt, in a very short period of time. And her six-year-old and her two-year-old were fighting over a toy. And she calmed them down. And then the next thing she knows, the two-year-old is screaming and he's got blood running down his arm. And she slapped the boy in the mouth. And I'm not saying that I agree with this. Now this woman, instantly after hitting her child, scooped him up. I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. She never hit her child before. Because she was on prescription medication. She told her mother-in-law. Her mother-in-law came about an hour and a half later and took her children on the premise she was going to go. They were going to just go for a visit. And she has never had any kind of opportunity with her children again. Why? Because with no criminal, oh, by the way, she pleaded guilty right off the bat. No real criminal representation in her abuse registry hearing. She had no lawyer. Her criminal lawyer could have saved her from this. He didn't. One smack. He could have saved her from this. This woman, this is funny. This woman is on the abuse registry list. Now let's go back to the parental alienation case now. In the parental alienation case, the mother admitted on the stand in testimony that she beat the crap out of her son in front of her one-year-old daughter. And this woman not only was not charged, is not on the abuse registry.
There is no rhyme or reason to any of it.
Back to the woman that I was just referring to, she cannot work. She doesn't want welfare. She can't go to community functions. Anything that has to do with children. Yep. Now, here's the funny part. Last summer, I was given an invite out to a graduation out in her area. She's from Hollow Water. And this woman paid my expenses to go out there and talk to people and help people. I did this. And at which point, we were sitting in her mother's house with her three-year-old, four-year-old little girl. And she was telling me, she's at her mom's every day, and that the little girl is with her. She leaves, she goes to her mom's at 8 o'clock in the morning and leaves after the little girl goes to bed. And
so
she was...
The
other grandma only wanted the boys because the youngest one, I don't believe, is the son of this woman. She has been battling CFS and trying to get off the abuse registry, and no one will listen to her, not legal aid, not no one. And last year, CFS allowed this woman 1 week with her children on an island in the middle of a lake by herself. So, either way you look at it, CFS is acting either incompetent or illegally.
Maybe they're trying to make up for the past.
No, I don't think they're trying to make up for the past.
How do people view the Child and Family Services here in Manitoba?
Child and Family Services. Well, I was a permanent ward of Child and Family Services, raped for 4 years by my foster parent, which I'm not allowed to publicize. He was given 2 years house arrest and 2 years probation in the community with no...
The person's voice you are hearing is named Junie Monaco, and she was a ward of the state at one point in her life. And due to some of the graphic nature of the story that she related to us while I was discussing with Kim Edwards down in the legislature, I decided not to play the entire interview that I had recorded with Junie Monaco and Kim Edwards. Later on in the interview, I asked Kim what she felt was the prime example of the structural violence of the system, the justice system against young children who are in foster care or wards of the state, or who are supposed to be looked after by various agencies.
Well, it's in CFS records that she was put on a toboggan by the foster parents and slid down the biggest hill in Fisher River. Number one, that would be child endangerment and neglect. A year later, when Phoenix's discovery came to light, that case was reopened, and it came out that that little girl died from a kick to the head with a steel-toed boot. The people who were responsible for this, they were charged initially with nothing more than assault, because no evidence. Those charges were initially, they were dropped, and they were re-brought up, then they were stayed, then they were re-brought up. Nothing ever happened in that case. The only thing that ever happened in that case is the parent and the relatives of Miss Travers were given subpoenas to testify in family services or family court in regards to the perpetrators of heaven, so that Child and Family Services could keep their children from them. This couple was never convicted, and they forced a man and his relatives to get up in open court and say that these people killed their daughter, which opens them up for libel.
Now, some critics of the system, Kim, would almost say that this is the way the system is actually supposed to work. The system is supposed to try and look after these children, and it makes it very difficult because of the nature of the families, the nature of the situations, the various communities involved, if for CFS and various outsiders to become involved, because there's such a great level of distrust. And so it's very difficult for some of these workers to be involved.
No, that's not how it's supposed to work. The Aboriginal children and peoples in Canada have rights that should be upheld, because what happened to the Aboriginal people in Canada is an atrocity. What is happening to the Aboriginal people right now, what is happening to the Aboriginal children right now, being perpetrated not by the white man, but by the Aboriginal authorities and the Aboriginal chiefs and leaders, they are allowing this to happen.
You have been listening to an interview with Kim Edwards. Kim Edwards is a woman who is concerned about child and family services in Manitoba. Kim is also the godmother of Phoenix Sinclair. And Phoenix Sinclair is a little girl killed by her mother, Samantha Keematch, and her boyfriend, Carl Mulcahy, in June of 2005. After much debate in Manitoba, a commission of inquiry into the circumstances surrounding the death of Phoenix Sinclair was started. It was started under the direction of the Honorable Ted Hughes, Commissioner. Kim Edwards presently is trying to have the scope of the inquiry widened to allow a more in-depth look at child and family services care in Manitoba. Kim has been on a hunger strike for the past 29 days and is striking about child rights and the child and family services system. You have been listening to an interview with Kim during her hunger strike while she is camped out at the Manitoba Legislature. The strike continues to this day.
Peoples together as one, fighting for our children, for they are the sun. Oh, red revolution, it's time to unite, it's time to fight for human rights. Oh, red revolution, it's time to unite, it's time to fight for indigenous rights. Justice and truth and freedom have called. We must give ourselves. our time is now. We must be what we were meant to be. Every man, woman, and child in perpetuity. No.
Piece that we'll be listening to now is called Bucksaw Jig. It's a Métis jig is sung in Michif, a combination of Plains Cree with French and English. The song represents an indelible fusion of cultures that produce distinct musical styles. It's performed by Winston Watney, Plains Cree.
Hey, hey, la belle rivière, coup de river, pour moi, j'aime mieux que baisse de bois avec un old boxer. Hey, hey, la belle fille, samedi, danse, pretty belle fun avec ma Indian squaw. Rim, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, hey Jean-Pierre, j'ai des bucks, c'est dans nos bucks, qui te c'est ton lily. Come on, you little bugger, can you hear you one with a gun in your back and your horse on the run? Read him in him down, did it, pound, did it, let it, let it, read it, let down, did it, let 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 it, mademoiselle, send the meat, Mindy, watch the voyage hard like an old mother hen. Hey, hey, Jean-Pierre, Donald, Lair, Bampri, I wish a little gal would marry me. Tomorrow morning, I'll go see Saint-Père. I tell him that I love his little filly there. I'll go with him to see Monsieur Le Curé. I'll tell him, ring-a-ling, I'm gonna change my way. Pine, little nip down, little lady, dip down, little lady, 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 little lady. This is the story of a one lone man up against a white in the Indian clan, trying to make a living on the lone prairie with a pretty squad that I married. Pine, him down, little him down, little lady, 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 little lady.